Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about yet another podcast on the periodic table. Look, the last one I did some work on the sort of the boondocks of the periodic table, chasing up a previous error that I had. I had said there were six astronomical objects. I've discovered, there's actually seven Ceres, and this was a planet in the, or minor planet, which we don't call a planet anymore, in the asteroid belt, and discovered in around 1800, so when they first began to have decent telescopes, people began looking for other planets, and they found very small thing. So Ceres is less than 1,000 kilometres across, so it would sit neatly in the between. You could have Sydney on one side and Melbourne on the other. And so we're roughly 1,700 kilometres away from each other. You know, a bit more that sort of size of stuff. I sort of don't know. Perhaps Paris and Berlin, Chicago and New York, that sort of size of distance. I don't know off the top of my head. I've been interested in that. You can consider it a way of big data. So that's got lots of data about each element, how it's named, and you actually can find out a lot about the actual how your market is related, how the market will respond to things. You can model what's going on. And one of the things I was lamenting is that it gives data itself, but it also elicits reactions. It gives you more data. The fact that people show brand loyalty to their data source and behave in certain ways, that gives you even more data. So more data. So, and afterwards, brain slowly switching on, I went into the kitchen to clean up, all the surfaces and stuff like that, and I was packing away the cereal, and I thought, oh, cereal, Ceres. Okay, just to put you back into picture, we've got helium, the sun, uranium, Neptune, Pluto, uranium, neptunium, plutonium. Then we've got the Earth and the Moon, which is tellurium, and selenium. They're stinky elements. So sort of all different sub-stories, subplots going on here. And then there's the most recent one, which I looked at, is cerium, and it's C-E-R-I-U-M, cerium. It's used for polishing, but it's, things are ticking your head. Oh, it's got an even number of protons, so it'll be very abundant. And indeed, it's more abundant than lead. It's sort of like the massive amount of this cerium going around. And therefore, if there's a massive amount of it, it's got to have some biological function. I'll check that out. Cerium. And then obviously, cerium is named after an asteroid. The asteroid's named after a goddess. What sort of goddess is it? And then you just do your podcast, continue along, and then cerium. Wouldn't be the goddess of the harvest or something like that, would it? The grain. Indeed, it is. And then you sort of quickly check it out. Good on your Wikipedia. And then you go, oh my goodness, they've actually stratified sort of working class gods for people who are doing working stuff, and there's political gods, so these gods are more, the sort of working class gods are more similar to our gods. They're in there just being nice. They're not actively interfering in people's lives, making decisions and deciding what's going on. So it's interesting. I will have a sort of like a periodic table viewpoint in terms of researching the Roman and Greek gods. But it's a Roman god, and this is because the planets are named after Roman names and stuff like that. So I said, oh, okay, that's sort of interesting. So there is actually another edible aspect to the periodic table. Not fully edible, but like beryllium was sugar, but cerium is for cereal. It goes across, and of course, people say you're thinking too much, reading too much into it. And this is what big data does. Like you read, try and read things into it, and actually look at the conclusions and do this closed loop. When you're looking at big data, you see a conclusion. Is that a valid conclusion? Well, then that if it's invalid, it means that you've got to adjust the way you're looking at the big data. It's sort of like the conclusions are not the end point. It's the conclusions are part of a cycle. Sort of this way of thinking, and of course, this big data thinking is not your commercial allegiance thinking. Where I look, I've learnt this from my teacher at school. They've said there's only three planets. That's it. That's it. End of story. My tolerance is very low. So if you can imagine people with a academic, like they've been trained at school. To have low tolerance because that they learn only enough to get in their tests. The test gives them positive feedback and they move on from the situation. So they're not actually rooted in the situation that you've built for them. Their mind is elsewhere, beyond. And so their loyalty, intellectual loyalty to where they're looking at is collectively low. So when I say collectively low, you'll find there's sort of a behavior system within a group. So, like the entire group can, fear can grip the entire group, or courage can grip the entire group, or lack of commitment can actually be infectious and get the entire group. That's something that you can't have much control over because facts are facts, and you're going through. So, this big data thing is not so much looking at a conclusion as an end point or a linear stuff. It's a circular stuff, looking through it. And so I just thought, and then the data banks went again. I said, there's actually an eighth one, isn't there? And I racked my head, and it would have to be another, is palladium. So palladium's after palladium of Athena. I sort of had looked at that. There is palladium of Athena. Is that name because? And you look up. Yes, it is named of, due to an asteroid. Now, cerium, Ceres. I sort of now remember in the noughties. Was it noughties? It could be 2015. Only a few years ago. And I think it's in the noughties. NASA sent a probe out to Ceres to really CERES to really look at it, and just gonna really rack my databanks here. It's I think it was called, don't quote me on it, I think it was called the Dawn probe, and for some reason, they didn't get the marketing right. I think everyone was all more interested in looking at these. I think most people remember the scientists getting all excited. Like, people are not excited by it, but they're excited by a whole group of scientists at Mission Control all jumping up and saying, "This is the best ever," and slapping themselves on the back. It's sort of like they're one step removed from the actual data or the actual meaning of it all, and sort of this again is sort of like circular stuff that the people look at the marketing conclusions, and that will set NASA space missions and stuff like that. But NASA did send up one of these little orbiting things. I don't know whether they actually fired anything into it. I think this is a little bit ahead of time where they fire in probes and get the information. Now, Ceres is actually a planet at war. It's a planet which is at war. It's a planet which is spherical underneath its own gravity, and there's I don't know how you pronounce it. Look, it's something that's just not in discussion at his Pallades or Palladium. It's, I don't know where it's in the belt. I think it would have to be a Palladium or Pallades. Oh, gee, that's mentally. Herschel found Uranus. Gee, I'm just really trying to think where it is, but Ceres is in the asteroid belt, and one of the things that people get this, it's sort of entered in the law that you have to actually get through the asteroid belt, and there's these rocks that hit the side of your spaceship. So Pallades is the size of, like it would, like do some damage. It's sort of like not a huge thing. And it's sort of an icy circular world out there. And then the so if you doubled the radius of Pallades to 2,000 kilometers, would it have 8 times the volume? But so the actual total amount of material in the asteroid belt, it's about half, a third, a quarter, somewhere in that fraction. So like the complete amount of asteroids in the asteroids belt is actually vanishingly small. Like you wouldn't have to worry about bumping into it. Ceres is a whopping big. Sort of like the economy of China in Asia in terms of it accounts for most of it. In the Asia region, the economy of China. So I'm just trying to say that Ceres is a massive planet in the sub-planet, dwarf planet in the asteroid belt. In fact, it's not half, it's under half of the amount of mass in there. So the other asteroids are just complete tidbits and shards and stuff like that compared in there. So the asteroid belt is something which is in imagination, but in reality it's incredibly small. Now, our moon is 5,000 kilometers across, so that's 255 times, more massive. So this is sort of just like a complete less than 1% of the size of the moon, and then 2% of the size of the moon, which is sort of like nothing. It would be about the total amount of material in the asteroid belt. So this is, I suppose, again the big data thinking. I sort of into my own head. I'm just saying, oh, well, because I'm podcasting, you can actually see almost live the information rebuild out of my head to come out. I didn't have the information before. And in a sense, it's probably good that my brain's been wiped clean. I have to reload it because it was loaded with Trojans. These Trojan things, which is information inside your head, and has behaviour associated with it, which like a virus is put into your head. The information is put in with a behaviour, and what's happened is that the information's been wiped. Reloading it into my head, and this time I'm actually comparing it. And I can say, oh, well, that information is with a virus. It's almost like a virus to load people information with a certain that there's three planets in the periodic table, plus the behavior virus of ensuring that everybody else agrees with you, so you get the same sort of marks. So it's interesting for me in that there's the information and also the viral aspect of the information being loaded in. I suppose I've been fortunate having the whole thing wiped out, and then you just reload it in. And it's sort of the information's there, but it's all scrambled, accessible, so you can see. As I go back, Sirium, and you sort of things, but it's almost as though it's an empty area, and you build these fibers across the blank database to sort of like social fibers and going across. Now, one of the things I think this is almost worthy of a play, and that's the Sirium. About three or four elements were of the rare earths were discovered in this Swedish household, and these famous people all lived in the same household. I know nothing beyond that glib fact, but I do know that's there, and it's look, there's a these dreadful look, only on the top of my head. Oh yes, Henrietta Leavitt. Was it? Oh yeah, this Boston company decided they would do a play about Henrietta, possibly Henrietta Leavitt. These plays about scientific things, just a mind. Oh, there's a play of Galileo and a play of Einstein, and these are forgettable, not forgettable things, but they are just not workshopped enough in terms, as far as I can see, that they play to the modern. They've got a modern message that they want to deliver, and really the story of the people involved are subsequent to them. But just talking about astronomical plays, one of the amazing things is that Shakespeare used to visit John Diggs, who was a British astronomer. I only found out from this by following up another astronomer called Bruno, which is like the most exciting astronomer, exciting mind ever. I'll say Bruno. I just his fight people don't understand, but I sort of do understand, because he was a big data thinker, in my view. So he dropped in on John Diggs, and Shakespeare used to drop in on John Diggs, and John Diggs was an astronomer, and he had his poster child of Tycho Brahe, who was an astronomer. I'm just trying to think of that. There's a British astronomer, a rock star, astrophysicist that they get to on the TV all the time to say, "Oh, look, I think this is great." They have to have him out on Star Watchers and stuff like that. I've forgotten what his name, Professor Brian Copps. Isn't that amazing? My brain is beginning to work again. To be absolutely sure, I would be able to think of a person, but not get their name for 2 or 3 days, and that's with no time whatsoever. How's that? A couple of seconds. So typically it would be like it took me a week to remember Geoffrey Rush, and I've got these names that I'm really struggling to remember. But they had these pictures up, and John Diggs said, told the story of this mad Danish astronomy king. And you could imagine Shakespeare listening, and Shakespeare wrote his play about a mad Danish king who's going completely mad. But in the play, he has references to the heavens and all this stuff. Of course, the play, the astronomical play written by Shakespeare, is Hamlet, and that's a real powerful piece. Whereas I think people who want to actually sort of, and that was sort of, you can imagine that the passage of facts was sufficiently weak such that creativity could come in. So I'm thinking up about my play that I'd like to write about these four Swedish people. Yeah, I think it's the element of a play. I'd like to watch it. I'd like to actually explore it a bit more. So there's areas that I'd like to explore about this stratification, that like the periodic table of gods, of Roman gods and Ceres, and you know, who's ever heard of it, or have you heard of Ceres? And it's a fairly common thing, a palladium, ideal thing for catalytic converters to make our world a bit more livable. And Dan, do you want to go be driven to school? I think so. Okay, well, I'll leave it there, and hopefully that's just another podcast where we get into the periodic table and keep on exploring. And so the number of astronomical bodies are 8, one sun, 5, or no, four planets, one moon, and two asteroids. How about that? That's pretty impressive. And look, I'll get back, and so I should finally do that. The planets of Uranus and I think even Neptune are named after Shakespearean characters. So that sort of adds the entire circle of complicated thoughts. So the planets, the moons of Uranus, are named after after Shakespearean characters. I think I have to think what they're named after. But there's definitely a planet called Puck, Puck. Sorry, a moon called Puck around Uranus. So that's something that the various students which I get researching always seem to come up with. They tend to sort of focus on that one very quickly. But it's all linked together, sort of the Shakespeare, like the Shakespearean characters are now out there in the cosmos, and he wrote plays about the cosmos, and you've got all these different structures going through each other. I hope that you can pick up the same fascination that I have, and you're receiving a unique thing in history, the actual person looking at it again, and actually podcasting it. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.